Once she is married, she no longer desires anything for herself, but everything for her husband. She becomes ambitious, untiring and insatiable. Her husband cannot do enough, he cannot be generous or active enough. Each evening when he comes home from a tiring day's work, he finds in his wife not only relief from his fatigue but also inspiration to begin again on the morrow. Her mission is to have no mission other than that of her husband. She must believe in his mission often with more conviction and for a longer period of time than he does himself. She is his collaborator not because she does the same kind of work as he but because she rewinds the spring and gives him confidence in himself and his work. It is in this very deep sense that we must understand the hierarchy of man and woman in marriage. Woman is subordinate to man because she is dedicated to his creative work and because in him and by him she fulfills her own personality and accomplishes her own mission. It is thus that she understands marriage. It is thus that she lives her maternity. It is often said that woman is made to be a wife and mother. But why separate these two functions? It would be better to say that woman is made to be a wife-mother. For even though there be several objects of her love, there is only one love. To bear the children of her husband is still to love and serve him, it is to accomplish with him a creative work in the fullest and most divine sense of that word creation. A woman who separates herself from her husband to give more attention to her children is probably not a good educator. She gives her children only a part of her conjugal love, and then appear the troubles and complexes between mother and child that modern psychoanalysis has uncovered. Conjugal love is not merely a compensating element of maternal love, but a living source. Conjugal love alone gives birth to children and nourishes them spiritually until their personalities have matured. There is this similarity between conjugal love and maternal love. A wife, before she has any children and even afterwards, has served her apprenticeship to motherhood with her husband. This is true not because she pampers him, or mothers him in the pejorative sense of that word which would be to minister to his childhood instincts, but because she pushes him towards a mature personality, because she helps him attain to this dignity of a person that is developed, free and consecrated to God. This conjugal maternity inspires and orientates, more or less consciously, woman's own maternity. If she were only a mother to her children, she would run the risk of keeping them always dependent upon her and thus prevent their growing up. If, on the other hand, she is a wife-mother, she looks beyond the present instant and gradually inculcates in her children that interior liberty which renders them capable of making their own decisions and of choosing a state of life rather than submitting to one. In other words, she does for her children in a different way perhaps, but the difference matters little here. Exactly what she does for her husband. It would therefore be absurd to separate, still more so to oppose, the roles of woman as mother and as wife. Both are necessary for woman to fulfill her personality and her destiny, both are realized in the personal and intimate gift which she makes of herself and without which she is in danger of falling into a way of life without any real roots or attachments. Such may be a life of freedom, but a freedom that is solitary, sterile and hopeless. Let us add that the wife-mother does not limit her influence to her family circle. This is a temptation to which many women succumb. On the contrary, the married woman has an indispensable social role. Balanced and mature, she is more apt than the celibate to exercise a good influence, for she exercises it in the capacity of a wife-mother. The qualities and virtues which she develops in her family are precisely those which she can give and which the world needs. It is impossible, and useless, to enumerate the number of things she can do. As long as she does not compete with man, her sense of non-material values, beauty, interior life, and sacrifice, her intuition of the mystery of things and persons, her intelligence and her love of children, the weak, the persecuted, the guilty and unwanted, everything that was only in germ when she was a girl, will develop 100-fold and seek only diffusion. Courage is needed for this kind of vocation. Too many women think that their mission ends within the frontiers of their home. They say they cannot do more. In reality, they do not believe it that they can do more. If they believed, they could. They have only to make the effort to discover that their family fife, instead of suffering, will take on new meaning and that their personalities, instead of becoming more dispersed, will become more centered. The wife mother is a complete woman. Such a woman can give everything to the world, such a woman the world needs. The mystical symbolism of woman. Woman's contribution to humanity and to man in particular is immense. She reveals and communicates to him experience of a twofold world with which he is, by nature, less familiar, the world which lies above and the world which lies below reason. She gives herself to man to become the wife-mother and thus radiates concentric waves of love and life in her home. This presence of woman to the world and to man is a source of exceptionally rich meditation. However, woman cannot be fully understood in a purely human perspective. It must be extended to include God. Studying the wife-mother in her relations to man, we gain a deeper understanding of the relations between humanity and God. This mission is less obvious, but it is not less real, perhaps it is more real. To understand it, we must penetrate beyond the merely superficial. We must have something of that Baudelairean insight which divines the signs and symbols beyond familiar appearances. What is needed, in a word, is an evangelical outlook that discovers the deep spiritual parables beneath the prosaic events of daily life. In woman are silhouetted the great shadows whose invisible presence we can suspect only through her. Thus beauty, and love, over and above the creatures in whom they are incarnate, evoke in us a world that lies beyond the ken of the terrestrial. For this reason man not only desires to know woman but dreams about her. It is as though her presence awakens in us a nostalgia that carries us beyond her physical beauty and her loving heart and puts us in contact with a higher beauty and another heart. The charms and physical graces of woman are like signs that are reflections and reminders of their prototypes in heaven. Hence woman is a great source of help for some and a lamentable deception for others, depending upon whether or not this quality of the infinite is sought in her. For Christians, the woman symbol takes on a very specific sense when considered in the light of faith. As wife, woman is offering and abandon, as mother, she welcomes the gift of man and renders it fruitful. Woman's relationship to man is an exact parallel of humanity's relationship to God. For what is sanctity but giving ourselves to God and fructifying the talents he has given us? This explains why in the Bible the themes of marriage and love are charged with such tremendous religious symbolism. The chosen people of Israel were considered as the bride of God by the inspired writer. God himself is always presented as a husband, sometimes loved, sometimes betrayed, but always loving. When Saint Paul used the marriage symbol to describe the relations between Christ and his church, he was but re-echoing the profound religious meaning of woman's relationship to the man she loves. This symbolism is not only valid in a collective and universal sense, but it also expresses the inner mystery of each individual soul. Woman not only represents humanity before God, but each soul before God. The Christian religion is a gradual approach to God. Anyone who wishes to practice this religion must learn to offer himself to God as woman offers herself to her husband, with joyful submission, total openness, and active dependence. He must also give birth in his soul to the grace of God as a mother conceives a child. He must nurture it, translate it into an effective effort towards extending the kingdom of God. There is no better symbol than that of the wife and mother, the wife-mother, to qualify the attitude of mankind before God. For this reason the mystical symbolism of woman is closely allied to the greater symbolism of Mary and the Church, both of whom are wife and mother par excellence. Thus woman is more at home in the sphere of religious values, she is more naturally religious. From her husband to God, from human love to divine love, the nature of woman is the same. In both cases she is greatly aided by the spontaneous impulse of her personality. Man on the contrary must in a certain sense double back on himself. His vocation is one of decision, of undertaking, of realization, of leading. In his religious practice he must do something of an about-face and learn submission, humility and dependence. Once he has done this he will find that his own specifically masculine qualities are greatly enriched. But at first the effort required appears odiously contrary to his nature. It is precisely here that the providential intervention of woman can help him. He can find inspiration in her example and conform himself to her image. This docile, impregnable presence of woman by his side can put him quite effortlessly on the road to God. There is no more beautiful spiritual lesson a wife can give her husband. Let us add that a man who penetrates far enough into the heart of his wife to become identical with her in her offering to Christ will make another discovery, that of God himself, or more precisely, of an essential aspect of God. Here we have woman in another great symbolic role, that of God Mother. Does a mother forget her firstborn? Neither will I forget you, Jer. 31:3, as a mother consoles her child, so I will console you is. 66:13. God envelops us and protects us, he watches over us and forgives us, he pours out special blessings upon the little ones, the poor, the downtrodden. All of that is maternal. It has been said of God, nobody is so much a father. It would be equally correct to say, nobody is so much a mother. Man represents to the eyes of the world the paternal love of God. But woman has the mission of revealing that God's love is also maternal. It was not by chance that God delegated a woman to watch over us until the end of time, a woman who is a mother, his mother. She is charged with reminding us of the maternity of God, in conscious or unconscious union with her, every woman in the maternity of her heart, which goes far beyond the limits of mere carnal motherhood, carries into every age a living proof of that reality. Even the serpent. Such is the mystery of woman, a mystery of light, but also a mystery of shadow. For through woman sin has entered the world and through her it continues to prowl about. Undoubtedly men sin, but the sin of woman is perhaps more insidious and more enveloping. Not to evoke this aspect of her nature would be to give an incomplete picture of woman. There is a temptation to say that sin weakens and darkens feminine charms. That is not necessarily true. A woman in sin remains attractive and fascinating, she still retains a power that is more than human. But everything in her that should normally lead mankind upwards, now drags him towards the depths. The essential and fundamental sin of woman is the refusal of her femininity. We have already called attention to the two principal aspects of her personality. On the one hand, she carries within her a world of extraordinary richness, on the other, she is made to give herself totally. When she ceases to balance these two tendencies and confines herself to a cult of self or gives herself without control, in both of these cases she is lost. The woman who says no to her inner personality, to her dignity of woman, corrupts everything she touches. For her instinct of self-sacrifice then works in reverse and pushes her to become not only man's slave but his accomplice. She espouses and flatters his most mediocre instincts and encourages him in sin. There is a kind of feminine wantonness, a flattering and seductive coquetry that the strongest of men sometimes succumb to. But this type of sin interests us less here than the other, what we might call the more noble sin of obduracy, the sin of a woman who feels the call of self-immolation within her but refuses to answer that call. This is no mere sin or weakness or rejection of feminine responsibility. It is a refusal of her very condition of woman. Above all, it is a refusal of man, of what she mistakenly thinks is despotism in man, whereas in reality it is support, love and protection for her. If she marries, she keeps her independence or imposes her will, often enough by a ruse of weakness that is her infallible trump and a cheap imitation of the enticing duplicity of her sister, the slave. They decidedly do not want children. I often think of one pregnant woman of my acquaintance who spoke severely of her cancer. Even if she has children, she brings them up as she pleases, frequently taking their destiny in her own hands. A woman who refuses to be a woman is of no use either to her home, the world or God.